Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome to episode 138 of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. Today's topic is one that is extremely near and dear to my heart. But I'm going to be honest with you, it's a topic that 10 plus years ago, I wouldn't have given a shit about. It is only because of my personal history that this topic is so extremely important to me. Now, I promise the conversation is much more exciting than the topic sounds, because today we are talking about bone health and how your diet may be destroying yours, like my eating disorder destroyed mine. In today's episode, I get to talk with psychologist in training, Erin. And Erin is going to share how her disordered eating habits destroyed her bone density too, and why it is so freaking important to care for your skeleton now. Not just when you're old, because osteoporosis and bone density loss and stress fractures can compromise your health, your happiness, and your quality of life now. If there is one thing that I wish I would have understood better, learned more about when I was struggling with my eating disorder, when I thought that living in a smaller body was in my best interest, it's this. I wish I would have understood the damage that I was doing to my bone density by way of dieting. So here it is, what I wish I would have known sooner, and as a result, am now sharing with you. Erin, first and foremost, I want to welcome you to the show. It is such a pleasure to have you on the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast, and I can't wait for our listeners to learn more about you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Erin? Who are you? What do you love to do? What might your dating profile say?
First off, that was such an interesting question, putting like, what would your dating profile say? Like that really makes me think. But I am a therapist in training. I also do some advocacy work for eating disorder recovery on Instagram. Given my own lived experience, I have a space there for just sharing information with individuals going through an eating disorder or their loved ones. Something fun about me. I am currently training for a half marathon, so that's been fun. And my dating profile, I am happily taken, so I'm trying to think about what dating profiles looked like. But my guess is probably something with like me being outside or drinking coffee. Those are very important things to me.
I love it. And I think I love asking that question, Erin, because I have never had a dating profile. So it's a very easy question for me to answer. I love the coffee and the being outdoors. And when is your half marathon? Congrats on that training process.
Thank you. It's November 7th.
Okay. It's coming up. We've got a couple months. Mm-hmm. And Erin, this is actually the perfect segue, because when I ran my first half marathon many, many years ago, and I just did it for fun and I loved it, had a great time. I mean, it was brutal, but I loved it. That sort of like pleasure pain oscillation. And then I decided I want to do a second half marathon, but this time I actually want to pay attention to time. I want to cross the finish line, but that's not going to be like the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is going to be to hit a certain time. And it was during that second half marathon when I fractured my hip because of terrible bone density due to a history of disordered eating, which is what we're here to talk about today. And we didn't even plan that. So that was a beautiful segue.
No, it's beautiful because I had a very similar experience when I was running during my eating disorder. And I think it's more common than people would think.
Oh my goodness. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that experience? I would love to know more. I love knowing I'm not the only one who put my body through that trauma.
Yeah. No, seriously. So for me, it was actually, I think, a moment where I realized I wasn't alone. And that was Molly Seidel was talking about, like, how she had to take time off for her eating disorder and how it had been leading to injuries due to having osteopenia. And I remember in 2016, I had been training for a half marathon, but I was doing it in a way that at the time was like very disordered. A lot of that, you know, not pacing yourself properly, not refueling properly, just not resting properly, all of those things that are sort of sending you towards the path of injury. And had a bad injury to my hip, like could not move really well. And I had just had a bone density scan done that the results had showed that I had developed osteoporosis. And so at that point, we were just like, it's probably a stress fracture. I didn't get an MRI to confirm that though, so I can't say that for sure. But like, they've never been able to find muscular issues or anything else at like PTs. But whatever it was, like, it definitely was related to the fact in my head, like, there's no way it wasn't related to the fact that I like wasn't refueling and wasn't resting and wasn't doing those things to like care for myself. And I think that hearing Molly Seidel's story, even being like the same year too, realizing that like there's other people who this happens to in the running community. And because of the impact of disordered eating on our bones and on just our body's ability to heal itself as a whole was really, really like eye-opening and helpful as far as like the training that I'm doing now and like recognizing the importance of injury prevention and all of those other strategies for being healthy while exercising for sure.
Yes. Oh my goodness. We need to talk about it so much more because I remember at the time I was on bed rest for a month with a broken hip in my early 20s. And I was like, this is insane. Like I literally am the only person in the world who could possibly be dealing with this.
Yeah.
And then flash forward several years when I recovered from my own disordered eating behavior, became a nutrition coach. I remember working with a client who came in two boots because she had numerous stress fractures as a result of running after years of disordered eating. So it's far less uncommon than we think it is. It's just that many people refuse to talk about it or don't know how to talk about it, or there's a stigma around disordered eating. So let's talk about it, Erin. Let's dive into it. And to start at the very, very beginning, can you tell us what osteoporosis is and why it's something that we should care about?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put out a disclaimer that I am not a medical doctor, so I might not always use the right words in explaining this. But osteoporosis is low bone density. It's caused by the bones go through this process called bone remodeling. And since the bone is like a living tissue, it breaks itself down and then it rebuilds itself. And so osteoporosis occurs when there's too much bone but breaking down and not enough bone building back up. And so oftentimes like an earlier stage of this that, you know, you might hear me or other people reference as osteopenia. So it's sort of like, you know, normal range of bone density and then osteopenia, which is early signs of osteoporosis, and then osteoporosis. And, you know, you can get a bone density scan in order to figure out that information. That's really the only way to know for sure. But the reason it's important is just, I mean, so many reasons, but a big one of them, right, is just that, you know, our bones only have so many years during which they really are building up this bone density. And so especially given that disordered eating frequently occurs during those like prime years for building bone density in the teen years and the early 20s, there's just a lot of people having low bone density at a younger age, not recognizing or not realizing the fact that those disordered eating habits or an eating disorder can impact their bone health for the rest of their life, because you sort of have until about 25, 30, it really starts to just like stop really ramping up and rebuilding. So it's something that I've heard a lot of stories from people, you know, especially with disordered eating and eating disorders, where it's like they they wish that they could have gotten on top of it sooner, because when it comes to treatment, like there's the treatments that are available, a lot of them, the medications that you would take, you can only take them for like a certain amount of time. So then it turns into like, you know, when you're going to take those and like, are you going to take them young and hope that they work? Are you going to wait until you're older? So it's like something that it's very difficult to treat. And the best treatment for it is really to try to make like some changes to what you eat and how you move when you're younger.
I think it's something we do, at least I'll speak for myself. It's something I never thought about when I was stuck in my disordered eating years, because I was so consumed with living in a smaller body and cutting out carbohydrates and calories. But where I'm at now, which is not ancient, I'm 32, but in this place in my life, I so wish I would have learned about this sooner and cared about my bones sooner, because when you think about it, like your bones are the structure of your skeleton, and the older we get, the less mobile we often get. And just having dealt with that fractured hip and then later a spine fracture and the loss of mobility that you navigate when you're recovering from an injury, and just thinking about how that may impact your future years, it's soul crushing. Like I mourn the loss that that disordered eating has created for my future potentially now, but it's just something that never even crossed my mind. Did you think about it at all? Like, was that something you learned about?
No, no, but it is, it's like so helpful to hear that though. Cause I remember like getting that phone call from my doctor. Like I didn't even, I think that like, because it had never been spoken about, like it took me a second to realize what a big deal that was. Cause I could hear that my doctor was upset having to give me that news on the phone. And I think that that's when it really sunk in for me, like, you know, shoot, like I have to start working on this because, it's going to impact my future. And I think that one of the other parts of it that's been really challenging is like, actually, this is so interesting. I just got my updated bone density scan before this podcast and was very, very fortunate to receive the news that in the past 5 years, in my hips, I have normal bone density at this time. And in my spine, I have osteopenia rather than osteoporosis. And I think that like, I am so proud of that. I think that just shows like how, you know, again, like starting to fuel your body and like be more intentional about the ways you move your body can be so helpful. And I think that there's like this huge misconception of like, oh, you completely reversed it. And it's like sort of, but you're also never going to get those years back. Like I can stop the damage from being done, and I can improve like my future prognosis essentially, and like how, what it's going to look like, but I can't go back and get all those years of like bone density I lost back. And I think that like, similar to what you're saying, like that's definitely something that's come to my mind a lot of like, shoot, like I wish that I could just go back and get those years of building bone density. And like, I wish that I knew sooner how limited that time frame is to make those changes and to rebuild the bone structure.
Yes, I feel the exact same way. And I think that's in part why I feel so passionate about talking about it now, seeing so many female athletes live in that headspace of like, bones, why do I need to care about that? Mm-hmm. And just wanting to make it more of a topic that's talked about rather than something that we wish we would have learned about sooner. Because that's a really hard, hindsight's 2020. It's a really hard spot to be in. Yeah. So Erin, to kind of take a slightly different approach, how does what we eat affect our bones? You mentioned over the past 5 years, you've done an amazing job at making sure that you're prioritizing certain way of eating and living in order to prevent future bone density loss. What's the connection there?
I mean, again, not a medical doctor or nutritionist, so you may know some more about some of the details of this than I do. But I think a really big thing was just, you know, working with my doctor on including more calcium sources in my diet, both through supplements as well as through changes in like what foods I was eating. Like, I think a lot of the times, you know, we want to cut out dairy. And honestly, like, I think I've just had to accept for me, that's like not an option. Like dairy is very, very important to me getting the amount of calcium I need in my diet. And so everyone's like different. There's a lot of different ways to get calcium. You can get it through different vegetables and like different sources as well. But I think that taking into consideration, like the ideal, you know, what I eat versus what actually my body needs was a big change, going along with that sort of like including more vitamin D, including more vitamin B12, but particularly just like the vitamin D and the calcium, just because in order for, and I'm like explaining this in my doctor's words, so like hopefully this makes sense, but like in order for the bones to have the fuel they need to do that rebuilding, like they need to be able to pull enough of it out of where it is in the blood, and then your blood, you're going to be deficient if it's pulling it out of the, so I like need more of it than a normal person would essentially in order to have like normal levels. So I think like really trying to like monitor my vitamin levels, like making sure I'm having that in my diet and then getting them monitored by a doctor regularly was a really big change, but it's definitely made a huge difference just to have someone, you know, because it took a lot, like it took a lot more than you would think. Like we kept increasing and increasing and increasing the amount of like calcium and vitamin D in my diet. My doctor was like, you just need a lot of it right now. And like a lot of it is because of like, you know, osteoporosis and bone density. But I think that like you wouldn't know that if you didn't have a medical professional telling you, because it's like so much more that I had to take than the average person in order to be hitting like the low end of normal, you know? So I think that there's a lot of people where it's like, if you're doing it without medical, without a doctor, and like, you don't have someone to explain that to you, like that would be really confusing as to like why you're still having some of the health side effects you are, even though you did increase these things. Like, I think that a big change, just like having to increase those vitamins above and beyond what I ever expected was a really big one.
Which again is something that, I don't know about you, Erin, I never thought about. Like I wasn't at all concerned about phytonutrient deficiency when I was stuck in my eating disorder. I was thinking about weighing less, wearing a smaller size clothing, feeling like I looked like the cultural ideal. And I never thought about whether I was getting enough vitamin D. And even so many of the women that I work with now, same thing, like vitamins and minerals, why do I need to care about that? But it is so important that you're, if weight loss is a goal, you're approaching it in a health first foundation kind of way. Because ultimately, I think what I didn't realize is as you undereat chronically, you can pull from fat stores. And then your body needs an essential amount of fat. So it starts to strip that away. And then you've got nothing left to give. So if the eating disorder, disordered eating continues, now we're going to pull from muscle and muscle's going to atrophy. And then we're going to pull from bone. And I just never was informed about that. So this is just such a topic that I think women need to understand. Weighing less at the cost of your health has really grave consequences, especially because osteoporosis affects women far more than it affects men. I think it's something we have to be addressing.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was something that I just like, I've mentioned this before, like in a couple of lives on my Instagram account, actually, but it's something that really stuck with me, like just talking about how, you know, BMI in some ways has really like negatively impacted just people's perception of like what healthy weight loss is, because like my doctor was saying, she's like, I have these women who come in here, and because they're in a smaller body and they're in that healthy BMI range, they believe that they're healthy and they believe that everything's fine. And then I see their lab results and I'm like, you are not fine. And I have to somehow explain to them, like, just because you're smaller, that doesn't necessarily mean you're healthier. And I think, unfortunately, that's like a really big misconception people have. And we all have different sizes that are our healthy place to be at. And I think that it's just, people don't expect that. And like, clearly that must be such a hard conversation for like medical professionals to have with people, being like, your labs are showing that like these vitamins or minerals are low. And like people's reaction then, as you said, is like, what the heck does that mean? Like, what does that mean about health? Cause it's not one of the parts that is really like frequently talked about unless you're a nutritionist or like very directly within those circles.
So true. Let's make labs mean more than the BMI chart, because we just don't care about that. Like in general, it's not very helpful. Let's make that movement a thing. Erin, tell us how physical activity fits into all of this for you. So you mentioned, obviously you're still training for your half marathon. How did activity change? Did it change throughout your eating disorder recovery?
Yeah, for sure. So as I mentioned, you know, I had been running initially in a very disordered way, specifically due to sort of like the compulsive exercise aspect, right? Of like not taking days off appropriately, not refueling appropriately, pushing too hard, not really swapping between different kinds of workouts. And so, you know, when you do that, it's not good for your body. And ended up stopping movement because of whatever happened to my hip, like stress fracture, we suspect, but whatever happened to it, like had to take significant time off of movement altogether. Kept trying to go back to running for a while, actually, without working on the disordered eating, and I continued to get injured. Like I would just not continued, but like I would have a lot of flare ups of like the pain, and had difficulty getting to a place where I wasn't having that. So I wound up, you know, taking a break entirely from movement for a while, just to really focus on healing my relationship with food. First, I think definitely like there's a huge importance of incorporating like weight bearing exercises. So during that time, I tried to like tend towards just gentler things that could do that, like yoga or Pilates was like my go-to. But there's certainly other ways of doing that as well. Running was actually something that was like always encouraged as another weight bearing exercise. It just really came down to like I had to get to a place where it was going to be healthy, because it's not going to actually have the positive benefits if you're, you know, putting your bone density at risk and then you're putting yourself at risk of a fracture. So that was like a really weird one where it was like technically running's like recommended, but if your bone density is going to keep decreasing, then you're at increased risk of fractures. So like that, it's not helpful. So I think it is really important just for people to recognize the importance of like, yes, some of these weight bearing exercises that are more like cardio intensive can be super helpful with bone density. And like, if you're not fueling your body enough, like it's gonna mitigate like the effort that you're putting in. So definitely, I think for me personally, given my history of an eating disorder, like taking the time to focus on healing that first and doing more of those gentler weight bearing exercises and then working up as I, you know, as I recovered was helpful.
I want to just pick apart something that you said there and just expand on it, because I really do think like with the running is a weight-bearing activity. Weight-bearing activities are really healthy for our bone density, but it's the motivation behind the activity. So if I'm running, technically healthy, air quotes, for bone density, but if I'm not running after having fueled adequately, or I'm running endless miles after my body is crying at me for rest, mm-hmm. it's no longer healthy, right? It's completely unhealthy. Yeah. So it really goes back to like the motivation behind the thing. And I love that you mentioned you had to take a break completely from activity. I'm sure that was extremely difficult for you.
Yeah. At the time, for sure.
I can relate. I, like I mentioned, was on bed rest, so forced to do nothing aside from like crutch my way from the kitchen to the bathroom. And it really, really, really took a mental toll. And at the end of the day, it was a blessing in disguise, because I had to face this addiction I had to exercise and what it was helping me cope with. I have not been able to return to running, which again, I think is a bit of a blessing in disguise, but have since really structured my training more towards strength-based activities. And another similarity, I got really involved with yoga as well afterwards. So I think it was really helpful just to switch my perspective from like cardio queen and cardio is going to burn the most calories for the time that you're doing it, to how can I really strengthen and support my body in many different ways and not just focus on the numbers that I'm burning or the calories I'm incinerating when I'm sweating. And I love that you've been able to add running back in a healthy capacity. I'm actually really envious of that, but I understand all of our journeys look different and I'm embracing that and I'm accepting that. But I do really think it's helpful sometimes to just take a complete break from physical activity when we're not fueling enough, when we're deficient in certain vitamins and minerals, when our bodies are crying for help, and just focus on nutrition. Because at the end of the day, exercise is earned in a way, right? Like if I'm not caring for my body, I don't have the energy to expend. I can't then expect my body to do more if I'm not giving it what it needs just simply to exist. And that was a hard thing for me to learn.
Yeah, for sure. I think that honestly, like, I had multiple times where I tried to go back to running, and for different reasons, I was like, this isn't going to work. And I think that, like, knowing what's going to work for you and what isn't going to work for you is, like, that's the goal, right? Like, not to go back to, like, a certain thing, but, like, to be able to have that self-awareness of, like, this is what my body needs right now. I feel like that's the win. Not that I went back to running, but just that I was able to gain more awareness of, like, what I can do in a healthy way and when I need to, like, slam the brakes on something, and to get to a place where I can understand that, like, if running ever did become, you know, start to veer into something disordered, knowing that I would be able to slam the brakes on that, I think was really important to me. And just the self-awareness part is the most important part.
So true. Erin, speaking of self-awareness, did you know there was a problem with your behavior when you were involved in your disordered exercising and your disordered eating? Or was there like a light bulb moment? Was it getting the bone density test results back? Like, what was the eye-opening moment for you?
That's a really good question. So yes and no. That's like a complicated one. I had developed an eating disorder by 2013. I developed restrictive type anorexia nervosa, and was put into treatment. And I remember maybe like 6 months before I was put into treatment, I did sort of have this moment of like, I think I'm crossing a line here where this is like no longer for my health. I think I've hit this point where I just like can't stop. And I do remember like having that thought, but then it's interesting because once I passed that point, like when people told me like, oh, you're like ill and you need to go to treatment, I was in complete denial. I was like, no, like I don't have an eating disorder. Like I've got this, you don't know what you're talking about. And I think that, you know, even though obviously like when you're put into treatment, like you eventually realize after all the appointments and all of that, that like, you're not well, like it's not really something you can deny at a certain point. But I think that I still wasn't really like, I didn't really believe that I needed to fix it or like work on it to the extent people were telling me I needed to. So I think I sort of like, I think a term used in the recovery is like quasi recovery. And oftentimes that gets like a lot of flack, but I think that oftentimes, like, I think a lot of people go through that where it's just like due to other circumstances, whether it be access to the appropriate care or access to the appropriate, like, you know, nutrition, or just, you know, not feeling safe in one's home or in one's body for different reasons. Like, I think there's a lot of reasons why someone could get stuck in quasi recovery from an eating disorder and not feel able to like take those next steps forward yet. And I think it's definitely something to just have a lot of self-compassion on. Like, you know, we all recover differently. I think that the osteoporosis, it hit me, but I didn't necessarily get better. I think I just developed, like, that was actually, once I received that diagnosis, I just developed different behaviors, and my diagnosis swapped. But my relationship to food did not actually improve. I think that it brought like a lot of like hopelessness at that point, because I think at that point it was like, oh, well, I'm sick and I'm just always going to be this way because I don't have like the space that I need to get better in. Come to show, like, you know, that obviously wasn't the case. That was some very catastrophic thinking on my part. Like, I was able to eventually reach a point where I was able to recover. But I think it sort of shifted a lot. That was like a very long answer, but I think like my awareness of it shifted a lot over time. And I especially think like by the time that I decided like, I'm going to focus on this entirely, I think that was the first time that I had acknowledged like, okay, you actually, like, you're not going to be able to have a good relationship with food, have a good relationship with your body, have a good relationship with movement if you don't like take time to focus on this. So I'd say like, but at that point, by the time that I acknowledged that, that was early 2020, honestly, that I like really sat down and was like, this has to be my focus. So yeah, that's a long answer. I apologize.
No, it's a convoluted answer. Like, that's just honest. And I can echo a lot of your story. Even after fracturing my hip, my relationship with food didn't get healthier. Mm-hmm. I went through this period of deep loss because I wasn't able to run anymore. So I had to do some, you know, internal, I had to sit with myself basically and sit with the feelings that I was trying to run from quite literally, but I was still counting my almonds and my raisins that I was eating as snacks, like whilst I was on bed rest. So it was all of these things just kind of added up to this crux point where I was like, something's got to give here. Like, this is not healthy and I don't want to live my life this way. But when I was in the behavior, there was not a time where I thought, this is really unwell. Like, I probably shouldn't be doing this. I was so stuck in the story of, well, running is healthy and living in a smaller body is healthy and having less body fat is healthy. And I think because that's so perpetuated in our culture as well, it helped me to justify the stories that I was telling myself. And I was a really big believer in those stories. So it wasn't until, like, you had this moment where you really had to look at yourself after years of engaging in this behavior and finally realize, I'm not sure this is really working for me. Like, I think something might need to change here. And I think that's why it's so hard when we're in our disordered eating patterns, because we can't see outside of that little bubble. But in hindsight, you and I can both look back and be like, what were we doing? Like, that was crazy in some circumstances. What would you say, Erin, listeners can do today to, one, help improve bone density? What can they do to make sure that they're protecting their bones? And potentially, two, work on ensuring that they have a healthy, confident relationship with food. If perhaps they might be stuck in some of these disordered eating patterns, what would you recommend to the listener who's like, maybe this is me?
Yeah. I mean, definitely, like, if it's accessible, I always recommend, like, reaching out to a, you know, a medical professional or a nutritionist, just because they can provide so much individualized care that I just obviously never could over a podcast, or online in any capacity. But I think also just, like, really focusing on adequately nourishing your body. And I think that, you know, acknowledging that our bodies each have different needs. And, like, I think oftentimes this message is conveyed that smaller is better, but I think bone density is one really great example of the fact that smaller is not better, and smaller can bring its own health issues. And there's a reason why we have hunger cues, hunger and fullness cues. And I think that especially, you know, if you tend towards the restricting side of, like, disordered eating spectrum, like, that might not come back for a little while. So it's really, really important to focus on, you know, just consistently eating, and getting your body used to having fuel again. And then when those hunger cues do start to come back again, just, like, really learning to honor them and be like, okay, I don't really understand why my body needs more fuel today or why my body's craving this food today, but, like, I'm just gonna, you know, accept it as what it is. And, you know, I feel the difficult feelings, whether that be guilt or fear, whatever it is that comes up for someone around food. And just, you know, knowing that, I think that, oh my gosh, some nutritionist said this and it always stuck with me, but she was like, fed is always best. Like, if you are hungry, fed is always best. And I think that, like, sometimes it's easy to get caught up in, like, am I eating perfectly? And, like, there's going to be moments where we have time to, like, meal prep ourselves, like, a nice little balanced meal. And there's going to be days where we have to grab something on the go. But if we're, like, fueling our bodies when our bodies are asking for it, ultimately, like, in the long run, that's going to pay off, because it's going to help break a lot of that up and down swing we have if we're either restricting or then, like, at another time binging and having that negative impact. I am so sorry. What was the second part of your question?
No, you've answered it. It was basically, what can we do to ensure that we're working towards a healthy, confident relationship with food? And I really like the fed is best mantra. That is really helpful. Is there something that you wish you would have heard earlier, Erin? Like, is there something that you think, wow, I maybe could have changed the trajectory a little sooner if someone had told me this, or if I had heard this?
You know, the future therapist in me is going to have to come out a little bit. And I think just, like, I think acknowledging our mental health issues and not normalizing trying to change our food and our body as a way of coping with negative mental health, because definitely they are intertwined, right? And like a lot of recommendations that we give for people struggling with anxiety or depression or other mental health disorders is to, you know, move your body more, and is to improve your sleep, and is to improve the foods you're eating. But then I think that that gets taken by diet culture to like this really huge extreme of like, okay, so we're going to restrict ourselves, and we're going to make our bodies and our presence smaller. And I think that for a lot of people who are struggling with mental health, sometimes that can have the opposite effect. And rather than being helpful, it can lead down a very scary disordered eating or eating disordered path. And so I think just, you know, not trying to use changing my food or changing my movement as a way of like not self, sort of like self-punishment or like, you know, self-punishment or seeking control or any of those things. Like, I think that a positive way of looking at it for mental health is like you're looking at it as a way to improve your symptoms, improve your mental health as a whole, but it's not intended to be something where you destroy yourself slowly and like feel accomplished doing that. Like, that's a really weird thing that we've normalized. So I think that just knowing that, you know, that's not a healthy coping mechanism for those internal things. I think that I wish I had known that sooner, with the caveat that like I don't think I necessarily had access to mental health care sooner. And I think a lot of people are in that boat. But I think that having like having someone to tell me that that would not be a good path to go down, and it wouldn't be helpful, and it would have a lot of those long-term side effects that like I can never fully reverse in the long run. I think I wish I had like more fully understood that.
I, as someone who used my eating disorder as basically like control seeking, totally get that. And I think I would have loved to have been able to make that connection earlier. Mm-hmm. However, I think I had to go through what I went through in order to be able to make that connection, right? Like, I think it had to be me living it rather than someone being like, hey, in 5 years, you're really going to regret. So
that's the tough part.
Yes. Yeah. We go through what we go through to learn what we need to learn. And sounds like you and I certainly learned this lesson the hard way. And I know we're not alone, but I think it would have been so helpful, like you said, to have some support, access to mental health care, someone who understood the nutrition side of things and the performance side of things and how those two kind of mesh together, and just have access to that a little sooner. So hopefully this podcast episode will serve as that access to those who need it. And Erin, I really appreciate you sharing your story, because I know it's not always easy to rehash some of those hard lessons.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think I definitely resonate with what you just said, you know, like it's so much easier now in hindsight, of course, to say these things. And so it is sort of a tough question, because it's like, yeah, I think that in the moment, if I didn't recognize it was a problem yet, it would have been really, really hard. So I think that like, if anyone is listening to this and acknowledging that like, huh, like maybe this isn't as healthy as I thought it was, just definitely like, regardless of whether someone has an eating disorder or has disordered eating, like, they are absolutely like, that's a valid issue. And like, it's something someone's deserving of support around now. And you don't need to become smaller or become sicker in order to deserve to have a healthier relationship to food in your body in the future.
So true. Erin, for everybody who resonates with your story and would love to connect with you or potentially have you as their future therapist, I don't know when that deadline is, how can they connect with you? Where can they find you?
Oh, future therapy will be a long time down the line. I'm in my clinical internship, but then after your clinical internship, you have to work for an agency to get your hours for a while. So I'm not going to be offering therapy services for quite some time. However, like my Instagram, where I do a lot of advocacy work and just share information about eating disorders and anxiety disorders, is at existing as Erin on Instagram. It's currently temporarily disabled just because I'm taking a little bit of a social media break, but it'll probably be up again like next week because I have some commitments on there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'll drop your handle in the show notes below so everybody can find you. And a social media break is probably a really healthy thing for all of us to entertain at a certain time, because social media can be very overwhelming and a huge propellant of diet culture, living smaller and sicker.
Yes, absolutely.
Erin, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing your experience and your knowledge with us today. And I know that so many will benefit. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.